Senior Focus. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Currie, and welcome to this edition of Senior Focus. And I have with me in the studio our guest today for the topic of community housing and the housing crisis. So I have with me in the studio the General Manager of DePaul House, Jan Routledge. And I'm not sure I pronounced that correctly, Jan.
It's Routledge, yes.
Routledge, right, thank you. And it's very, very good to have you in person here.
Thank you.
You're a busy person and your time is very valuable, but we value having you here because for a long time, from about 2014 through to 2019, as the housing crisis was gaining speed and there was more notice being taken of it, how it was impacting, I remember, you know, it was, people were rather sceptical, particularly when it came to seniors. Everybody felt, oh, most people own their own houses, so it's not a problem, you know. And it was quite difficult to actually get traction around what the housing crisis really meant, what was happening, and how it was growing. But it's definitely been with us for a long time. And with COVID distorting things, it was difficult to see how things were progressing. There was such a lot of new building going on that it looked as though, oh, there'll be houses for everybody. But it hasn't turned out that way. So I'm just interested, Jan, for us to kick off the discussion about what the housing crisis actually means for seniors. And that'll be our sort of intro to the program.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. Mm. So it's a privilege to be here. Thank you for the invitation. For DePaul House, we started 40 years ago. Housing, I mean, we were started as a voluntary group back 40 years ago. So the housing crisis, I don't think that's an overstatement, has been four decades in the making. And for seniors, I would state that DePaul House has only opened its door to seniors in the last 18 months, and that was due to the demand we were seeing coming to our door. DePaul House is a transitional housing provider, so we provide temporary support, social work support, learning centre and early childhood support. We are also a CHIP, which is the permanent community housing side of it. So we've grown significantly in response to what we are seeing coming to our door. And seniors are very much at the forefront of that.
Yes, and that fits with the statistics that I'm aware of, that around about 30% of seniors are renting and don't own their own homes. Yeah. And for those, they will pay an average of, at the bottom end, about $370 a week for a one-bedroom or a granny flat, and going upwards up into 500.
Yep, your information is more up-to-date than mine. I mean, we work on the social housing side of things, so for people who are eligible, including seniors, they will pay no more than 25% of their income. For the majority of people we are working with, it's a benefit or superannuation only, so their income is adjusted to 25%, sorry, their rent is adjusted to 25% of that. So you are talking at the really hard end of the housing continuum where people are really, truly struggling. And the other thing that we see with the seniors that come to our door, it is a house and a home of their own, but it's the essential loneliness of these people. They have no support for whatever reason, and they are complex, and that's the other primary initiator of why they're coming to our door. There's no help. There's no whānau. Government agencies, with the best of intentions, can be difficult to deal with, particularly with the drive to online. That doesn't always work for seniors.
No.
So, you know, it's a really complex issue, but essentially it's about a roof over your head and a safe place to call home. Yeah.
Yes, and I think for people who do own their own home, it's perhaps they haven't rented at all. from way back in their 20s. They left their parents' home and they went into a home with a partner. They married and they've lived in home ownership situations for the rest of their lives.
That's right.
And so some of our audience will be in that category. And some people have got no experience of understanding the kinds of circumstances that actually draw people into this. But I did talk about a housing continuum back in the day when I was writing articles about the housing crisis. And this was before COVID. And at that point, there were some people saying that the policy levers of government, the choices government makes, the way government funds housing, for example, funding a supplement to beneficiaries to help them pay rent, doesn't actually help people provide housing. And I think that's probably the biggest crunch point that we've got at the moment in the way we deliver things, because everybody who's helping this situation is not directly funded by the government. And so I think it's good for our listeners to understand a little bit about the community housing providers, about the sector, and about how they are taking on the responsibility of actually building houses.
So in answer to your statement, community housing providers are not for profits generally. So they are there for community good, and they're often local based. We very much are a local provider in the North Shore, and that I think is essential to the way that CHIPS, which is the shortened version, acts. So they're local, they know their community, and they respond to community need. I think, we're building, we have a build program on at the moment. That is not a financial proposition. It's a response to the community that we work with. And that's what CHIPS will do. They will invest in housing for their community for the long term. Whereas private landlords, and they're acting rationally. I'm not critical of that. They're doing, they're there to make money. They have a different motivator. CHIPS are not those entities. They're there for the good of their local community. And they are able to operate currently because the government provides the top up between the income related rent, the 25% of income that people eligible pay, and the top up to market rent, which is what the CHIPS receive to make it financially viable. So it is a complex structure, but it only works with government funding. What the government currently and never has been able to provide, rightly or wrongly, is capital grants up front. Actually, that's not true. I think way back about 25 years ago, there was capital grants available, but they haven't been since then.
No. And that's really the biggest barrier, because when you go out to build, you have to borrow money, and then you spend the money coming in from the rents to pay that back.
That's correct.
And actually, when you provide housing, you're providing not only the roof over someone's head, but you're actually helping them stay healthy. You're actually helping them connect socially. You're helping them be less anxious because they're more comfortable. They know they're not going to be on the street. And all of that actually lessens their health cost. So there's considerable savings to the government.
That's right. It's the long-term impacts. And I think that's probably what the market, and we are, you know, trying to work within market forces in a difficult way for a not-for-profit entities. But you are correct. The long-term benefits for health, for mental health and physical health, and just for general community connection are enormous, and they're not costed out in the purely transactional nature of our current housing system. So people, private landlords, mum and dad investors, are acting rationally. What we've got to do is try and change the motivation behind why people are investing in housing and make it a social dividend as well as an economic.
Yes.
Because if you don't add that into the equation, we're going to keep on this cycle, basically.
Yeah, we've got this, people have this idea that they can invest in a house here or even a house there. There are significant numbers of New Zealanders who invest in quite a lot of houses. In fact, about 50% of those investing actually own 10 or more houses. Mm. So it's not an insignificant factor. It's not just a casual mum and dad investors type situation where they have a small unit down the road that they let out. That's only a very small part of it. There are some people who go into it as a serious business. And because there's no capital gains tax, it makes it quite profitable. And I think that this is something that the government has been very mindful of it being a bit of a political football. But I think there's a lot of politicians in the House, probably, I've seen figures, but it's around about three-quarters of the politicians currently in the House actually own property themselves, which they invest in. Mm. Not just their own house, but other property that they rent out. So as a result, we've got this culture of investing in houses, and it creates a cycle of rising rents, and we're not actually providing sufficient housing for the people that need it, of the type that's needed.
That's correct. Yeah. No, I fully support.
And so people who are building houses for sale, for the rental market, are not necessarily providing, accessible housing, for example. And there's such a need for it.
That's right. There is. And that's something else that the community housing chip sector is doing. Their, accreditation standards are higher. Particularly with the changes, I think, with the pending changes to the Resource Management Act and things. So CHIPs build to a high standard. They do take into account accessibility features, and they're very much building for their community. I think what we see coming to our door is seniors who are singles and homeless, but we also see intergenerational living, which is not surprising. Across our Māori and Pacifica cohorts. And so that's grandma living or granddad living with the extended whānau. And it's a social and an economic necessity. And often in overcrowded, extreme overcrowding. And it's very hard to house that kind of intergenerational living in our current social housing settings. CHIPs can do that. There are some working in that field now. Penina Trust is our first Pacifica CHIP. And that's something we are very much looking at ourselves. So housing for seniors is singles, but it's also reflected and often hidden in that intergenerational homelessness.
And, of course, there is this new development too of grandparents taking on parenting grandchildren, and when the parents are drug addicts and not able to take responsibility for those children, grandparents step up, but they often don't have suitable accommodation or facilities
do this. A woman who's actually living with us at the moment, she's taken on the care of a two-year-old. It's part of her extended whānau. She's a surrogate grandmother, but the complexity of, she was living before she came to us in a wool shed up in North Auckland. She'd been there for 2 years. She's an exceptional woman. She had been volunteering in her community, and when she was asked to take on this baby, she accepted. And, you know, she's now with us. She said to us she can describe the difference in both her adopted grandchild and herself. She said, we haven't been ill. We're happy. She's engaged in all of our classes. She's learning how to connect on the internet. And she's really, you know, she's an amazing woman. She's full of empathy and love for her community and her grandchild. But she has had to come to us to get the appropriate housing to take on the care of that child. Mm. And I think that's sad. Although it's what we do. Our housing system should be more straightforward. You shouldn't really need the intervention of a group such as DePaul House or, you know, entities who work in the sector. It can be quite random. It's just the luck of whose door you happen to knock on and who knows whom. And that's not a housing continuum, and that's not secure and stable housing.
Oh no! Undoubtedly, it's the random nature of it leaves people can leave people feeling very despairing and without hope. And if they've knocked on many doors and had many no's, they reach a point of despair, and it can drive people to suicide even.
And I think it's shame, especially for that older generation. You know, it's not, sometimes it's that tipping point in their life. They might have lost a business. Often it's ill health. They've been successful, self-employed people, but ill health has led to the closure of the business, the loss of their rental, and then the need for support with housing. And they feel great shame. It's the hardest thing in the world to come to the door of a place like DePaul House. I think the relief once you do is enormous, and we can see it almost, you know, lift from people. But I think that New Zealanders, as a rule, would be shocked if they could see the need that often goes underground because of that shame and because our housing system is fractured, I'd say. And that's, you know, that's been across many decades. It should be a long-term agreement between political parties. It shouldn't be one of those footballs. It should be one of those stakes in the ground. This is a cross-party agreement. We will do this. And
because housing is a human right, because it is so basic, because we are effectively territorial animals, we need our space. We need to define ourselves by who we are, by having a place that we can call home, a place where we can just relax and actually be ourselves. And that's very difficult to do if you live on the street, or you live with uncertainty, or you live one step away from being homeless. It's annoying anxiety that keeps you awake at night. It's just not a place that anybody should be. Yeah.
It's not, and it isn't just a roof over people's heads. It's the people living within the foray, within the home. You have to make sure they're feeling supported and connected, because otherwise a home of your own, can be the most unsafe place in the world. You touched on rough sleepers. Not all of them, but some feel safer on the street than they do in their own home, because they associate closed doors with trauma. You know, it's a complex issue. You've got to have the housing, appropriate housing, but you've also got to have social work or support services there to make sure people are living well, happily, and are supported in that housing.
And we have had previously on the program Maxine Stilling from Homaru Housing, and we are unfortunately unable to have her company with us today, but it's just talking about the housing situations that people find themselves in and the need for the wraparound support. I've just been thinking about I think we've grown quite a lot in terms of the quality of the wraparound support that community housing providers are able to do, and the standard they're able to achieve in that. I think from my experience of where people are at, who sometimes come to my door, because I wear several hats in the senior community, I just feel that there are many more options out there than there were 10 years ago.
Yes, I think you're correct.
And I think there's awareness of the strengths of the community housing sector. I mean, politicians were inclined to just ignore the sector for a long time, but I actually think there is more engagement happening, both between community housing providers and finding ways to collaborate, to share information and ideas about ways to intervene and sorts of housing to build in the future, and the sorts of practical innovations that can come on with the new products available, and with climate change initiatives and so on. So I think there's a lot happening in the sector that's really good, and it's coming from this collaboration, and I think this is the way to the future. And I think the getting the politicians engaged is probably an important next step to sort of really, and some of the effort has to come from the community housing sector when they've been knocking on the door for a long time, but it's like telling the stories, getting the stories out there. The stories get through to the politicians.
And this current government is very much reaching out to the sector, to the CHIP sector. I think they've described this as, and I'm not meaning to quote Chris Bishop, but I will. He's agnostic about who owns the homes, and sees CHIPs as part of the solution rather than just a central government-led solution, Kia Ora Ora. But I still think there's a place for everybody in the mix. What's lacking is potentially an equitable funding model that covers, similar to what Kia Ora Ora have, who do a fantastic job. They are New Zealand's largest landlord. We need public housing, but we also need CHIPs who can, you know, build for the community, build in those niche places with the accessible housing, and for the long term. I think that's the other thing. It's a long-term solution. It's not just a short-term stay of, and you may know more about this than I do, Anne-Marie, but at one point I think private rentals were turning over every year. I'm not sure what that's looking like at the moment, but that's problematic.
Private landlords, at the behest of rental management companies, often go for a lease, and those leases are often set with an annual review, which means there's opportunity to put the rent up, but also it's an opportunity for the landlord to end the tenancy, because both parties have to renegotiate. And, of course, now that the law has reverted back, now landlords can say, well, I want you out in 90 days without any...
With no notice.
No notice and no reason.
Yeah, we've certainly seen that coming to, you know, people in that situation, not just seniors but families who are affected by that, you know, have been long-term renters and are unable to continue in that long-term rental because of that no-fault eviction.
But the contrast with looking at what's happening in countries that are housing their people well, we can see in Canada, for example, 100% of the houses are accessible. So that means it doesn't matter if you fall and you, you're on crutches or you've got to have a wheelchair. You may be temporarily incapacitated, but you don't have to move Well, you don't have to just migrate to live in the garage because you can't go upstairs anymore.
Yeah.
You've got options because they're already built in. The design has anticipated that somebody in the household may become in need of accessibility at any point in time.
Mm.
Or their friends may be visiting and their friends need accessibility.
Mm.
I know people who've had to shift in older age to maintain friendships because their friends could not access their property.
Mm. No, I'd agree. I think we have to change. New Zealanders have, it's that quarter acre, you know, paradise, the single site. We've got to change the way we look at housing. You can only do what you state Canada have done by changing our thoughts about housing. And it's not just a capital investment. It's for the long term. It's for you to age well in. But we can't keep building those big properties that drive the financial gain. We've got to change our perception of how we live. And it probably starts with our generation, Anne-Marie, because we're probably the ones that benefited from it. And, you know, unfortunately, New Zealand has a divide now between those who own property and those who don't. And it's generational, I argue. Sorry, we're launching off the topic a bit here.
Well, it's important to look at the strategic overview because if we're going to get any change, we have to have a long-term plan. And with that long-term plan, we have to have bipartisan approach between parties. We can't have one party coming in and doing something and the other party coming in and tossing it out and back and forth like a football. And we have to look at what the best practices overseas. We have to actually say, well, look, some people are doing it and doing it well and they're getting the health benefits. Those health long-term health benefits are being locked in by having the housing issues dealt with. And in Europe, where they have intergenerational housing, they have long-term rentals. You can rent for all of your life and stay in the same place. That's all possible, and it's under private ownership as much as it's under state and social housing. So I think really we need better options that are sustainable long-term and that provide accessibility.
Agreed. I would agree. But to do that, we're going to have to change the way we build, and it's a big issue. And if we don't address it, it's going to cause further problems. So, yeah, no, fully agree with what you've said.
Well, thank you very much for coming in, Jan, because otherwise it would be me talking on my own. And I don't think that would be very exciting. I think that it's very good to have somebody who's been in the game as long as yourself and who's seen the wonderful benefits that accrue to the people who get housed and how it transforms their lives.
It does, and we can see that daily. That's why I've stayed so long in this game, because we can actually see the transformation it makes. So thank you.
And would you like to leave our listeners with a website contact?
Sure. So if you want to know more about DePaul House, it's www.depaulhouse.org.nz.
And thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be with you next week.
Thank you.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
been. Up out on the rain, I'm watching you fade. Hold on to the ammunition.